Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
From BGS and Osiris Media, you're listening to The Shift List, where chefs talk about the music that fills their kitchens, restaurants, and recipes. I'm Chris Jacobs. This week on the show, our first of three episodes from the great and wintry city of Montreal. First up is Arthur's Nosh Bar, a cozy breakfast and lunch spot serving Jewish classics with a twist, located on the now bustling Notre Dame Street in Montreal's Saint-Henri neighborhood, including menu standouts like crispy schnitzel served on thick-cut challah, or a latke smorgasbord featuring organic gravlax, fluffy scrambled eggs, and caviar. Opened in 2016, Arthur's has garnered praise from Bon Appetit magazine, Goop, and Canada's Globe and Mail, and I got a chance to speak with owners Reagan Steinberg and her husband Alex Cohen, who, like most married couples, have a rapport and chemistry that's all their own. That is to say, this is a pretty freewheeling episode, as we sat down amidst the hustle of Arthur's staff wrapping up service in the middle of a Tuesday afternoon to talk about everything from the playlist they prepared for the birth of their daughter Freya to their personal and professional journey that led them to open Arthur's. I gave them both a microphone to capture the conversation and ambiance of the restaurant, which means that I stayed off mic for this one, but I think it captures the family spirit and vibe of this beloved spot that's sure to be a mainstay of Montreal's Jewish food tradition for years to come. From Montreal, Quebec, this is Arthur's Nosh Bar.
Hi, I'm Reagan Steinberg.
I'm Alex Cohen, and our daughter is Freya Alia Cohen.
Today's her
3-month
birthday.
She's born 3 months. So I don't understand this 3-month birthday situation. She's 3 months. Her birthday is in a year.
Yeah,
I don't understand this whole birthday
that.
Thing.
So when we, because I had to have a C-section because she was breached, so she wasn't in the right position. So our doctor was our surgeon, and he said, oh, no problem, bring in a playlist. So we were waiting.
Yeah.
They
like,
always,
play music while you're
they do surgery to playlists all the time. That could be another segue, surgeons and their playlists.
Oh
but.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's a great idea.
And so before she was born, the other couple had like some crazy rock and roll, and they blast it. And so we put up this crazy playlist together.
Well, first let's figure this to how we found the song.
Sturgill Simpson?
Sturgill Song.
Yeah, it's a Sturgill song.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world.
Welcome
Polywog.
To the world, Polywog. Welcome to Earth, Polywog.
Okay, yeah.
So I found, not how we, how I found the song, obviously. So I'm the one that found it.
Yeah, he's the song curator in our family.
So basically, I'm listening to it and I hear the lyric. It just randomly popped up on my playlist. Okay. And I listen to it and I hear the lyrics and literally I started crying. But I had a problem. It was based around his son. Because he said the first lyric was, a son was born. Then I tell Reagan, I was like, Reagan, when he listened to the first lyric, he's talking about the son, not his
yeah,
son.
And
the
I, was
son
like, what?
I made it up to convince her, like, the son. She fell for it, and then it worked great. So when we walked into the doctor's office, they couldn't connect her phone to their speakers.
So we couldn't get our playlist.
So they had to. We had to postpone her surgery. So they can download the song, and then they were able to play it.
And then they just played it on repeat for
the full hour of surgery. Was just that.
Hello, my son. Welcome to Earth. May not be my last, but you'll always be.
And then right before he pulled her out of my belly, he's like, okay, restart the song. So it was like a boom moment. And
it's like there's intro and it comes up and then you hear him speak.
Yeah.
And then at least two of the doctors came up to me and asked me what the name of the song was.
Yeah, they loved
who's
it.
The artist. I think everyone needs to listen to that type of music before you do anything like... big. Every time I changed her diaper at 4 in the morning, it was play me Sturgill Simpson, and that's what we did. We just played that, and then during the day, we play a bit of Brent Cobb, and then depending on how we go, then we play Uncle Lucius, some Uncle Lucius, the slower song Uncle Lucius.
I play her some Beyonce. She likes Beyonce.
Yeah, Beyonce is amazing. Of course you have to. She has to know strength and things like that, for sure.
But that's the classics.
That's the great thing about country music, right? It's because it's easily followed. You could easily sing along to it. There's
yeah,
a chorus
to it.
Yeah, but
my dad, we grew up on the Stones, yeah. AC/DC, Bob Seger. Like, these were, like, in my car, this is what we were singing to. Like, I didn't know any of the Temptations, the Four Tops. Like, this is what, this, and that's still what I listen to.
Yeah, like your children's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, like, mine was Alabina, Gypsy Kings.
Gypsy Kings is a good one.
Yeah, Gypsy Kings is a good one. It was mostly Arabic and Spanish music, my parents, yeah.
Is that your parents' background?
Yeah.
But you grew up here?
Yeah.
In Montreal.
Yeah.
I'm here, Montreal. Yeah, his parents are
like,
from Morocco.
Like, she lived on top of the mountain? I lived on, like,
I didn't
Midway
live on the
mountain.
Top of the mountain.
Midway mountain.
We met haphazardly. I was brokenhearted and recently broken up with a long-term boyfriend, and I went to it. My mom took me for drinks to make me feel better, and Alex was cooking there.
Where was it?
This is a call Lucille's
a
at the time.
A long time ago, and they switched that up and things like that. I started working as a dishwasher, this and that, and then became a cook.
You just, we were telling our story
sorry.
Of how we met.
Oh,
not
how we
how
met.
How you became a cook.
Yeah, basically, so, no, it's fine. This story is way more interesting. So basically, I started at the restaurant, and I just broke up with my girlfriend, and we just broke up. And yeah, great timing. But I saw her, and I go up to my boss. I was like, dude, who is this girl? I was like, I'm obsessed with her look. Like, I need to meet her. And finally, I got a number. And finally, I started writing her and texting her. And then she's like, hey, I'm trying to work things out with my boyfriend. Could you stop writing me these dirty messages?
Yeah, these were disgusting, filthy things.
Filthy messages. I don't know what I was doing. And I was like, sure, no problem. So she doesn't believe this. But a week later, she calls me and we go out for a drink.
I waited specifically 2 weeks.
Whatever it is. We did that. And then I guess I moved in a week later.
Yeah. He was supposed to be a rebound.
I was supposed to go to the CIA. I was supposed to go to New York for school.
CIA.
Carl Institute of Man. I was supposed to go there for school. So I couldn't go to that school. There was certain things in situations happened. And I decided to go with her to Asia instead.
Where in Asia?
Everywhere.
We did 8 months backpacking through all Southeast Asia and
India. But we got engaged the day before we left. And we told each other, if we're still together when we come back, we're for sure going to get married. She ran away from me 3 times in Vietnam, right? 3 times in Vietnam. I found her every single time. Every single time.
I didn't go that far, let's be fair.
Well, I just went to the nearest restaurant. And it
wasn't that far. So you took 8 months.
Yeah.
And
that was like a break. So I quit my job at Joe Beef, and he quit his job at the time. And we both, I needed a change at that point. Yeah. Like,
what were you doing at Joe
Beef? I was a cook. I worked in all their sister restaurants. I started at their day place called McKiernan. Mm-hmm. And then I was working part-time McKiernan, part-time Joe Beef. Then I moved to Liverpool House, where I did Garde Manger and Entremet. And then told them I wanted to go on this trip and that I was planning on leaving, left, came back, went to work at Joe Beef and worked there until I guess I was... in my late 20s, yeah. And then I quit to open our own first business, which was as a catering company.
Which her chef told her, don't do, because
he's like,
the rest of your life,
you'll
make chicken
fingers.
For
rich kids and crudité platters. And lo and behold, I
certainly
did
do that.
But I enjoyed working for myself.
Was that after you got back from there?
Yeah, so I worked at Joe Beef for a while. And then before we got married, I was like... I think, like, after we get married, I'm going to do my own thing. And he was like, it's a terrible idea.
Company.
You didn't have enough
experience.
I was
still working at another restaurant. Then she asked me, like, basically, she was like, well, I need your help with this. And I'm like, you're interested in joining? I'm like, fine, no problem. I'll join, do it with you. hated the hell out of it. It's catering. It's very different.
He worked as a private chef for like a judge.
So I worked as a private chef to help with the catering and this and that and all this jazz. And it's just not like you're going into a restaurant and doing things with your, like, let's say, comrades and teammates and other employees you work with. Exactly, you know what I mean? And you have to deal with every single... We did our own thing, but you have to deal with every single person and all their problems and all their dietary restrictions and yada, yada. And it just wasn't fun anymore. So we decided, okay, now if we actually want to be able to have our own stability as a business and not depend on so many other aspects, we need to find a location. So 2 years later, we found a location. And then if you notice, the kitchen is as big as the dining room because it was meant to be a catering space with a counter, salads and sandwiches and soups.
We didn't have any tables.
We had no tables. We had nothing. But halfway, or more than, like, I'd say a third or two-thirds of the way done, we were like, why aren't we doing a restaurant? Let's just do it. We have the location. We have the space. It looks like this area is going to be really hot. Or really, I can't believe I just said really hot. Please.
St. Henry, yeah.
St. Henry, yeah. And so we said, screw it, let's do it. So we did it. We put the tables in. We redesigned everything. We came up with the menu, all this jazz. Okay, so we built it. And then 2 weeks before, Reagan starts having a panic attack. Like, literally crying. Panic attack. I just did the math, and we have to serve this many people a day to make any money to be able to pay for this.
If we need to sell 25 sandwiches a day, and we won't pay rent, and who's going to
come? We're only going to do 21 clients a day. We're never going to do anything. There's not enough seats. And who's going to come eat in a Jewish restaurant in St. Henry? Our parents are afraid to come here. Like, people were afraid to come in this area.
No, that's not true. Don't say that.
My mom was.
That's not true.
My mom was, but old. I mean, like, old mentality people in Montreal.
There's a lot of elderly people who are not afraid of it, but they didn't know the area.
But here we thought it was perfect because you have Westmount right up the street, you have downtown, you have Pointe Saint-Charles, you have Verdun. You're literally 5 minutes away from every area in Montreal.
And honestly, it was it wasn't even that we thought of it so much as like the location. It was more that we could afford the rent. We knew it was an up and coming place. We were never like, this is the perfect spot. We were like, this is a great spot for what we can afford and what, you know.
Yeah.
And then the first day, so we had this panic attack, but we're not going to get money. It was stupid. What the fuck did we do with ourselves? We're such idiots. My parents are like, you should have opened an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, everybody loves pasta.
Everyone loves pasta. You know what I mean? That was my family. Who was eating pierogies in this neighborhood?
Yeah, that's what they kept saying. They're saying, they're not going to come eat your food. They don't want smoked salmon.
So the day we opened, there was over 100 people waiting outside to come in. And we didn't do any marketing. We didn't do nothing. We did nothing. We chose that we are not going to do promotion. We are not going to do anything. We're just going to be word of mouth. And I guess because it's the newest Jewish restaurant in a long time that has opened, I'm assuming that that might have been a reason why. And people just flooded the place. And the day we opened was like the reverse panic. It's, how the fuck am I going to serve all these people? Oh, great. Especially when your oven blows up. I'm not joking. Your oven blows up and schnitzel's on your menu and none of your fryers work. And latkes and this and that. Everything was done by hand. Pan seared by hand. Everything. Do you know how long it takes to do these things by hand on a pan? It was crazy. It was nuts. Oh, so we're open. We're open. Everything's going well. We get our first orders and everything goes. Okay, where's table 30? Where's table 20? And we're working in the kitchen. We're both back there working in the kitchen with our chefs and our cooks, stuff like that. And then the guy checks the oven. He's like, everything's raw. Nothing's cooked. What do you mean? Oven just blew. Okay, put it in the deep fryer. Deep fryer just blew. Are you fucking kidding me? So I'm finding myself downstairs. While the gas is running, I'm playing with the gas lines, trying to unhook the gas lines to make it looser, tighter, this and that. No idea what the hell. I'm on the phone with my gas guy. He's just like, okay, push it to the right. My right, your right. I'm afraid I'm going to blow up the restaurant. It was our first days of opening.
Oh, yeah, it was really bad.
Oh, my God. It was terrible.
Like, one fridge... The two of us on the line.
We were not prepared. We were not prepared.
And pans with oils, this dip. One other person.
And then we had a salad bar here.
So they were doing garde manger.
They were doing garde manger up there. We thought it'd be this really cool thing. It was stupid.
The chef's
work. It was so dumb. Watch the chef Fuck that. That didn't work. Disaster.
They were getting slammed. The cold food would come up from there, the hot food from there. No one could.
No one was communicating. These cooks hated those cooks
because
their job was easy.
Yeah, because when there was nothing to do, they couldn't prep. They couldn't do anything else because they were in front of the public.
So they were just hanging around having conversations, and everyone else there back there is slaving away. Oh, man. It was too much.
Yeah, now we're getting a handle of it.
We're getting a, yeah.
We have an amazing chef that we hired named Luca, who's been like an amazing hand for us, who's been able to kind of help us standardize and.
Not to say that the people that used to work with us weren't amazing in their own right.
No, but it's just been a different experience, and it allows us to step back and work on our new projects and stuff like that. So.
It's amazing how much you learn, and the mistakes I made and we made in the beginning of this operation to now, the mistakes that we don't make anymore, it's crazy.
So whoever's working on like the hotline is in charge of the speaker usually. And this can range from anywhere from like heavy metal to...
During service?
Oh yeah, they can range from death metal to 90s hip hop to Spice
like
70s,
Girls
to 70s
R&B. Sometimes we get some Disney songs.
Yeah, we get a lot of Disney.
Broadway. The thing with Arthur's is that they're in service from 8 in the morning until 3. So that's a long ass service. Usually you come in at 12 or 2, let's say, and you start service at 6 or whatever time, you know, so you're only in service from 6 to midnight or 6 to 11, so it's 5 hours. Here it's a long day of service, so they need the music to like keep them going. They come in at 6:30 in the morning. They need
They're starting.
They need it for like to boost energy and morale.
And it's also because we were, we were cooks, we were chefs, we were this, we still are at some points here and there, and we literally love nothing more than listen to music. Right, and there's that. Obviously, you're making a podcast about chefs and music and this and that. So obviously, there's a connection to music and cooking, right? There's a reason for it, and yeah, and sometimes their choice of music is, pardon my French, fucking horrendous. Like it's terrible. Like it's like, it's just like. That's literally all the music is. I've been through it.
I think we're just too old. Like,
no,
we're not
No. I just think that you pass certain stages of music as your career and as you get older. Like, now, the type of music I listen to is about 85% country, which a year ago I never listened to. Well, now I'm going down Sturgill Simpson, who's incredible.
Yeah.
Chris Stapleton, obviously. Yeah. Brent Cobb, his voice is just like just calms you down. Yeah, it's like this. Okay, so his song is not. It's Coming Home to Alabama, or but we just call it Coming Home Again. And then every time Google repeats it, we're like, shit, we got the name wrong again.
Last night I drank until I passed out in the middle of a crowd of folks I didn't know.
Margot Price. Like you know, Dory Freeman. So now I've just been listening to Dory Freeman a lot. Just reminds me of the really old style, just very little background noise and just her. I love that.
You say you can't save me, but I never asked you to. Can't you just?
I find our music situation is a bit complicated because we never did like a proper like this is the restaurant playlist. So when he was here, he was playing his playlist, and I would play my playlist, and the other manager would play, you know. So then eventually, like, we were just playing a lot of anything.
No, and the beginning for me was after 2 o'clock, I played Notorious B.I.G. or Tupac or Wu-Tang or this and that.
Day's
winding down. I'm playing a bit rougher music. There's the crowd's a little younger. This and that, I can play some music. Before that, I try playing country, but it's really hard to play country in a restaurant where you can't listen to music loudly. Because you can't understand it. It's not the best vibe music because it changes and one's slow, one's upbeat, one's this, one that. You mean like you'll end up, if I do plays, you'll end up listening to Rascal Flatts and then it's gonna be... I don't know, something really
Taylor Swift.
Like sometimes a lot of times during brunch, I'll always play a little bit of Electric Light Orchestra. Because I think that's like one of the best wake up music you can listen to, because it's more like getting you ready for the day.
Got a strange magic.
You got 80s music and you got about this and that. Sadly, I can't play death metal. I love death metal. You mean I used to listen to a lot of like when I was younger as a cook. I went through stages. Like I said, like at one point I was dubstep. Just dubstep. Before it was techno. Then it was hard rock, and then it was classic. But as years go, like I said, now it's more country and opera. And jazz and blues and this and that, like
more blues than jazz.
But yeah, and like I think it's gonna change again.
You're just more soulful in your old age. Yeah, I'm old because like I listen to all oldies when prepping, or like French cooking music, or if you look up French cooking, it just plays like beautiful French, like romantic, like Charles Navourin, or like stuff like that.
Opera for sure.
Alex loves opera.
Like loud.
Yeah, loud. Like we used to come in at 6 in the morning. Yeah.
I know.
And he would be prepping so loud to opera that the neighbors upstairs are actually, the boy that lives there is deaf, and his girlfriend would always complain that how loud the music was at 6 in the morning. We're like, we're so sorry. She's like, my husband is deaf, but he actually loves to feel the sound through the vibrations in the floor. She's like, so he doesn't mind.
So it was amazing.
But she's like, but for me, it's really not working out.
You find a lot of that stuff, like food, right? You hear one type of music, and then an artist might hear that music, like, oh, dude, that'd be great as the base for something else, and this and that. And that's why I find food, and that's what's so great. Food is such a connection to everyone that music is exactly the same thing. You mean you can't live without music, you can't live without food. Imagine a world without music. It'd be fucking sad. Be gray. And it wouldn't be enjoyable. And with food and the food, it's just, those are the two things in life that you have a connection with. You know what I mean? It's like the two things, it's like, you know, they say the only two true guarantees is death and taxes, right? And guarantee life and death. The only two things that can guarantee you happiness is music and food. That's it.
That's a great quote.
Boom! Nailed it.
That was a
quote.
Yeah. That's
good.
And we're
perfect.
Done.
And we're done.
That's
done.
A wrap.
Alex, shut up before you say anything stupid.
Yeah.
Shut up.
And we're out of here.
Thanks to Reagan Steinberg and Alex Cohen, owners and inspiration behind Arthur's Nosh Bar in Montreal. Head over to arthursmtl.com for photos, menus, and more about their beloved neighborhood of Saint-Henri. And if you find yourself in Montreal in the near future, stop in for an amazing breakfast or lunch every day of the week. Always first come, first served. The Shift List is produced by me, Chris Jacobs. Our executive producer is Amy Reitnauer, with help, as always, from the entire BGS team, including associate editor Justin Hiltner, marketing guru Joseph Klingel, and all the amazing writers and contributors that make BGS the best source for roots culture redefined. Special thanks to Osiris Media. Check out their entire roster of music and culture podcasts over at osirispod.com. If you love The Shift List, please leave us a review or rating over at itunes.com/theshiftlist. I'm Chris Jacobs. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Cindy Howes and Lizzie Ngo from the podcast Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians.
Basic Folk is truly changing the game with our well-researched deep dives that aim to empower the listener while fostering the folk community.
I basically am writing worship music for youth group rejects.
Maternal regrets and maternal guilt are universal.
I try to make things that are beautiful and that are made with like a purity of intention.
You can listen to Basic Folk on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or at basicfolk.com.